Joe Engel built Engel Stadium and named it after himself. He ran the Chattanooga Lookouts for more than 30 years. Engel may be the best-known historical figure in local baseball. He pulled some pretty crazy stunts on the field.
Phone call to Hitler.
Phone call? What was phone call to Hitler?
Opening day. When we introduce the lineups, he walks out to home plate with a telephone, dials a number.
That's David Jenkins. He's a longtime sports writer. He writes for the Chattanoogan. He covered the Lookouts for many years for the newspaper. He also wrote a book called Baseball in Chattanooga. So what is phone call to Hitler? Coming up, Jenkins is going to tell us about that and other highlights from local baseball history. Stay tuned. A Roundabout starts right now. Hello and welcome to A Roundabout Chattanooga. I'm Michael Edward Miller.
And I'm Garrett Crow. Mike, baseball season is starting. The Lookouts opening game will happen April 4th. But in this segment, we're going to look back.
David Jenkins is joining us. Jenkins is a baseball historian and sports writer who used to report on the Lookouts for the Chattanooga Free Press. He also wrote a book on local baseball lore. His book is called Baseball in Chattanooga.
Jenkins tells us that this is a special anniversary. 50 years ago, black players and white players were together for the first time ever on the Lookouts.
You see, the Lookouts used to be part of this segregated league. They were part of this league for years and years and years. It was called the Southern Association.
But then the Southern Association folded, and that happened in 1961.
So in 1962, after the association folded, we actually didn't have baseball in Chattanooga. But then the Lookouts joined a different league, nicknamed the Sally League, and in 1963, the Lookouts came back, newly integrated.
It's a significant part of local history, but Jenkins says it's not getting a lot of press.
Jenkins joins me in this interview to talk about integration and other stories from his book, Baseball in Chattanooga. David Jenkins, welcome to A Roundabout Chattanooga.
I appreciate the invitation, Mike.
This is the 50th anniversary of the first integrated team that played here in Chattanooga. You write about that in your book, Baseball in Chattanooga. So what was going on 50 years ago with this team?
1963, the Chattanooga Lookouts were back from the dead. There was no team in 62.
Okay.
61 was the final year of the Southern Association.
So that was what the Lookouts were associated with in the 60s or the 50s.
The 60s and the 50s and the 40s and the 30s. The Southern Association goes all the way back through the history of the Lookouts.
Okay.
It died an ugly death because it basically refused to acknowledge what the rest of the world was seeing, and that was that the color line was gradually being erased. And the South Atlantic League in its incarnation at the time, the decision was made among its owners and its league president, who was a very visionary guy, to add some teams and fill that Southern Association void. The South Atlantic League, or the Sally League it is commonly called, had been integrated for a decade. So, 63, they knew they were going to have black players.
Yes.
And the Lookouts, on opening day, had three players in their opening day roster. Bobby Jean Sanders, a second baseman from Center, Alabama. Adolfo Phillips, an outfielder from Panama, who went on to be a big leaguer for about a decade and an all-star caliber player for a year or two. And Hank Allen, a first baseman outfielder who was the older brother of a much better-known Phillies player a few years down the road named Richie Allen, Dick Allen. But their debut game was in Macon against Pete Rose and the Reds Farm Club down there. So there was not a lot of fanfare. And to my knowledge, to this day, they've never been acknowledged or saluted or appreciated as the pioneers, the groundbreakers that they were, possibly because in 1963, it was more of an embarrassment than a brave statement to finally be integrating the lineup. But Joe Engel was all for it.
In your book, Baseball in Chattanooga, you refer to Joe Engel as the Barnum of baseball.
I wasn't the first.
Why did he have that nickname?
Well, promotion was everything. And he was a promoter. He was a manager of a Hollywood or a touring comedy duo of former ball players. Nick Altrock was one of them. He had events that had nothing to do with baseball that were something he was as passionate about in their own way as baseball. Joe Engel, you have to realize, grew up wealthy. This is not a rags-to-riches story. He was riches to riches. His dad owned a motel in Washington, D.C., about, a matter of less than 10 blocks from the Capitol building. He grew up with a kind of a life of luxury. He was a major league pitcher, and he was a tremendous success as a scout before he basically got his dream job, and that was to run his own club. This was his reward for all the other things he had done well in baseball, to run the lookouts for Clark Griffin. But he realized that the teams that he was going to get, often as not, history proves, were pretty bad. People were not going to show up to watch them lose 80 games a year on a 130-game schedule sometimes. So he had to make Chattanooga a place, a destination. He needed to do things to bring people out. So he had phone call to Hitler.
Phone call? What was phone call to Hitler?
Opening day, when we're introducing the lineups, he walks out to home plate with a telephone, dials a number with a microphone in front of him, and basically cusses out Adolf Hitler for 5 or 6 minutes. You know, hilarious, you know, routine. Do not have a transcript of it, but we have bits and pieces. He basically called him everything that you would be tempted to call Hitler in the 50s. Elephant hunt?
Yes, he had people actually dress up like they were going to hunt elephants.
Well, they had natives in their loincloths and their spears. Yes, very politically incorrect stuff.
Yes.
And what was really ingenious, though, is he had a tape loop of actual elephants, you know, braying, and he had a big speaker system stuck underneath the stadium. So people were up above the stadium hearing this under the stadium and just knew there were live elephants down there. And they turned out to be tarps on wheels.
Oh, put me in cold. I'm ready to play today. Put me in cold.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking to David Jenkins. He's a sports writer for the Chattanoogan. He also wrote a book called Baseball in Chattanooga. Arcadia Publishing put it out in 2006. Jenkins is here talking about Chattanooga baseball legends as we look forward to the Lookout's opening day. Here's more of my interview. Why did you decide to write a book about the history of baseball in Chattanooga?
Essentially, no one had. Turns out someone else was writing a similar book to mine at the same time. What this is and what Arcadia is known for are pictorial histories.
Yes.
Ordered or stipulated to have X number of photos in this book, X number of pages, and cut whatever copy doesn't fit.
Wow.
So I have a lot of leftover stuff that I wrote for the book that never got used, and it took, I would say, twice as long to find all the photos as it did to write the book, for, among other reasons. The local newspaper refused to cooperate and let me have access to his archives. Oddly enough, most of the photos we needed found their way to us, and I'm very proud of what we were able to get. A lot of the books that Arcadia does for different cities, every city in the Southeast has had baseball teams, has a similar book, is a lot of them were photos of these guys after they had moved on or made it to the big leagues. We found photos of these guys when they were still with the Chattanooga Lookouts. Hall of Famers like Harmon Killebrew, Jim Cott, a pitcher back in the 30s named Alex McCall. We were able to get a photo from Cooperstown that was part of Joe Engel's actual collection that was hanging in his office during the day. There were a number of those that we were able to acquire from the Hall of Fame, but photos that no one had ever seen. And I had a personal archive of photos I had salvaged literally from the trash.
From an actual trash can. People were throwing away these historic photos.
Well, they were throwing away the negatives. I had 800 negatives, and these were like these oversized, if you can see my hand, I'm holding about a 5x7 black and white negative that from picture days that were taken for the News Free Press between 1947 and 1960. And what were people going to do with them? They weren't identified. And to print them would have been a very cost-inefficient thing, because we're talking about like 800 of them. Well, I sat on those literally, most at times, for 20 years, And Wonder of Wonders, digital technology came along.
Oh, yeah.
So we found a partner, a photographer studio in Fort Oglethorpe who converted all of these 800 photos onto digital, onto CDs. And I got to sit down in the library and identify these year by year, face by face, image by image. And we had about 93% of the 800 photos identified for our archive. And, you know, some of those made the book also.
One of the things you talk about in your book, Baseball in Chattanooga, is the fact that most people don't know about the connection between the Lookouts and Cuba. What was that connection?
A scout for the Senators. He was to the Caribbean what Joe Engel was to the mainland. The Senators only had a few scouts. They had unlimited territory and unlimited budgets almost to go and find. His name was Joe Cambria or Cambria.
And that was like kind of the parent team of the Lookout at the time, the Senators?
Right. And he was not, but even though his name is kind of ambiguous, he was not Hispanic. He did not speak Spanish. But he knew where the ball players were. And Cambria made his way through Cuba. And why Cuba especially worked was so many of their ball players were light-skinned. In fact, one of the best who played in Chattanooga, won a batting title, went on to the big leagues briefly, named Ortiz, actually was blonde and blue-eyed. And they actually made a movie about him in Cuba. And when he died, there was like 100,000 people at his funeral. Like, you know, so these guys were legends. But they also would pass the pre-Jackie Robinson eyeball test as far as being ball players who are not, it's hard to even project yourself into the mentality of the era, but they were light enough to pass as Caucasian players.
Yes.
And in 1945, with all these players off to war, they had something like 15 Cubans on the team. And that one year, the manager of the team, and being here at UTC, this is especially significant, Scrappy Moore.
Oh, wow.
Managed them for that one year. And they finished last, had a horrible record. And a lot of those Cuban players were never seen or heard from again in America. And Scrappy famously said during the year, "I don't know what they're saying. They don't know what I'm saying. So it's all the same." it's one of those unappreciated things, and one of the things that made writing a book about the Lookouts to me essential. This stuff needed to go on paper, and God willing, that stuff that didn't get in, and all the things I've learned since I wrote this book 5 years ago, will go into a book that McFarland has commissioned me to. Well, commissioned, they've requested that I write. Commissioned too formal a term, I suppose, but there will be another book, God willing, on the history of baseball in Chattanooga that fills in everything we didn't talk about in Baseball in Chattanooga.
David Jenkins, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Glad to talk about it.